It's Central Time. I'm Shereen Seward in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. This Tuesday, NASA's Cygnus mission lifted off from Florida, carrying cargo and science experiments bound for the International Space Station. And earlier today, it successfully docked at the ISS. And on this mission's cargo list, tomato plants. The tomatoes are part of an experiment from scientists at the University of New Mexico and UW-Madison. They hope to find out more about what helps plants grow in zero gravity and how we can feed the space explorers of the future. One of those researchers is with us now. Simon Gilroy is a professor of botany at UW-Madison. He leads the Gilroy Life Science Lab, which investigates how plants sense their environment and how that affects their development. Simon, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, hello, Shereen.
Well, before we get into specifics, congratulations on the launch this week. What did you feel like when you watched your work shoot up into space?
Yeah, it's one of those experiences that we've seen multiple launches, and every time it is absolutely amazing. I mean, just watching a rocket launch is amazing, but Watching a rocket launch that has your stuff on top of it is it's very difficult to describe to people who haven't seen it.
Oh, I can't imagine. When we think about growing plants, water, sunlight, nutrients, that all comes to mind. But it never occurred to me that gravity could be a key player in why plants grow the way they do here on Earth. Can you explain all of that?
Yeah. If you think about it, gravity is the great constant. It's everywhere. It's been unchanging for the whole history of life on Earth. So life has sort of grown up adapting to one times gravity, and it affects so many things that you don't even necessarily think about. So you can definitely go like, oh, well, we know up from down as human beings, and we can sense that direction. Plants can clearly do that as well. You know, classic thing, roots growing down, shoots growing up, that's sensing gravity. But it affects how water moves. It even affects how the air and the gases around plants move, and all of those things together sort of shape how biology operates.
How do you try to account for that lack of gravity and get the plant to grow in the right direction without that sense of up and down?
Yeah, because it feels like it shouldn't work, doesn't it? I just always fall back at this point on biology is absolutely mind-blowingly amazing. And plants cope. I mean, astronauts cope with being in space, and plants cope with being in space. And it's that whole thing of like life will find a way. And so plants have to grow in a direction, right? So the roots are going to have to grow in one direction. The shoots are going to grow in another direction. And what they do is they key into something else. So plants are fantastically sensitive to their environment, and we provide them with lights. And so the gravity cue, which is sort of their basic background cue, disappears. But light is a very, very powerful cue for plants. And so the shoots grow towards the light and the roots grow away from the light.
Have you been able to kind of predict what you think will happen when it comes to getting them up there and growing them in space?
Yeah. Although biology is amazing and biology copes, space is a classically very alien environment. And biology has all of these great adaptations to living on the surface of the Earth with one times gravity. And when you move into space, it'll cope, but it is clearly not happy. And so we see that the plants grow a little bit slower and they switch on a lot of their defenses. So we see a lot of pigment production. And if you look at the genes which are being switched on, they switch on defense-related genes and stress-related genes. So our prediction is, we already kind of know this. This is not so much a prediction as we know what is going to occur, which is those plants are going to be slightly unhappy. They're going to grow, but they're not going to be growing optimally. And part of our experiment is a treatment with a fungus that we think will be able to sort of ameliorate a lot of that stress biology.
Yeah, explain a little bit about that fungus. I know it's important part of this experiment. What do you expect it to do?
Yeah, so biology very rarely works alone. And so plants don't work on their own, just growing in the natural world, there's a lot of symbiotic interactions that occur. And so there's a naturally occurring fungus in the soil. It's got the great name of Trichoderma hazianum. And it's everywhere. It's like on your feet at the moment. It's,
yikes.
It's a naturally occurring fungus. And it interacts with plant roots. And when it first interacts with a plant, the plant just freaks out. And it sees a fungus and it thinks bad pathogen, and it switches on defenses and all the things you would imagine it would do to defend itself. But then over the course of a couple of days, you know, they come to an agreement, and it turns into a symbiosis where both plant and fungus benefit. And one of the things that the fungus does is it switches on inside the plant a lot of antioxidant production. And you know that whole thing, if you should eat fresh fruit and vegetables to have a high antioxidant diet, mm-hmm. that is, that kind of chemistry is being switched on inside the plant. And antioxidants are one of the countermeasures that we think are going to be very useful for protecting you against what happens in space.
That's so fascinating. I have to know, though, why tomatoes? Why not why not cucumbers? Why not green beans? Why not carrots? I mean, what is it about tomatoes that made you think, yep, this is what we want to check out?
So, you know, there's a lot of background that goes into an experiment that goes into space. And there's been a lot of plant biology that has been done on the space station. And so we have flown a lot of different plants. We've flown cress. We've flown even flown cotton. But NASA has also flown a lot of plants. And one of the ideas is that we want to understand what happens to plants that potentially in the future could be part of an astronaut diet. Maybe not sustaining the astronaut with everything they eat, but you have no idea how grateful they are when they get fresh food and vegetables that go up there. It's just,
I can
amazing.
Only imagine, right? I mean, because how often can they get that?
Yeah, it's not every time that a resupply rocket goes up there, there's fresh food on it. But then, you know, months of the freeze-dried stuff that we all know mm-hmm. from watching movies of astronauts. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what is grown in space is leafy greens, because one of the things you want to do is eat most of what you've grown. And so things like lettuce and cabbages and things like that, you do consume most of the plant. But mm-hmm. who wants to live off lettuces and cabbages for their entire life?
No, thank you. And so
it turns out that tomatoes have lots of bonuses. They provide some variety into that fresh fruit and vegetable thing. And also, the tomato fruit has a lot of beneficial chemicals in it. For the astronauts, one of the things we want to give them is a lot of antioxidants. And tomato fruits are a fantastic way to do that.
How long have you been working on this project? I'm curious.
So there's a long, long lead time. This is about year four or year five of setting everything up. So we've been doing about 4 years of prep work to get to the point of being able to put this thing on a rocket.
Well, besides getting the plants to the space station, what have been some of the challenges for you and your team over the last few years?
A lot of what space flight experimentation is you design the experiment, and then you have to take the step back and go, well, you know, we're not going to do the experiment. An astronaut is going to do the experiment. And they are absolutely amazing individuals, as you would expect. But they didn't design the experiment. They didn't work on the science behind it. So we spend a lot of that time, of that prep time, working out how to make the most robust experiment we can, and work out all of the challenges that we can expect that an astronaut would have, and then try and tweak the experiment in order to make it as simple and straightforward as possible, but also yield all of the experimental results we want. That turns out to be a challenge which takes a pretty large team of people with a lot of different expertise to think their way through.
Are there other vegetables? I know we talked about some of the other vegetables that are there, but are there other vegetables that you think you'd like to work with later as this kind of goes on?
So the bigger the diversity of sort of the crop plants which we can grow in space, the better. It's the classic thing of, especially if we're thinking about this as being a supplement to the diet, the more variety, the more likely it is that you're going to want to eat that kind of food. And one of the things that happens to the astronauts is, you know, it's a stressful place for the astronauts as well, and they kind of lose their appetite. So we've been thinking about a lot of different plants. The leafy greens are obviously going to be the sort of the focus for a long time, just because of that whole thing of eating most of them. Tomatoes, potatoes, sweet potatoes, all of the things that you like to eat. That's basically where we're going to be going.
We've got about 30 seconds left in our time together. I guess, what would success look like for this experiment to you?
Oh, I mean, of course, we're hoping that the tomato plants, which are inoculated with this fungus, grow into huge, bushy, healthy plants. If we saw that, we would be pretty happy.
Well, Simon, I want to thank you for sharing with us, and I hope this is all successful for you. It's fascinating.
Well, thank you.
Simon Gilroy is a professor of botany at UW-Madison and head of the Gilroy Life Science Lab. He talked with us about his research on growing tomato plants in space. His team's project arrived at the International Space Station earlier today. Coming up, we'll talk with an author about the lost art of hanging out with our friends and why she says we should do more of it. Stay with us here on Central Time.